I'm trying to allow this process to be finalized before we start. Can you finalize? It's like an open process. Are you fine in this way? Are you able to focus on the board? Can we then continue? Are you afraid that we can continue?
Right.
Okay. We will allow the department present us, Mr. Gumede, to present us just pricing the presentation. It is normal here in our parliament that we introduce ourselves to you before we start, because from time to time committees, members change, and also departmental officials change. Let us know one another before we can continue. I will allow first members to introduce themselves to you. I am the chairperson of the committee. Mwabangogo is my name, from the African National Congress. I will start from here right across. Can you use your micro, please? These are recorded.
John Lennon, member of the committee, AMC.
Nambula Machizela, member of this committee, Erling Pati.
Dr. Adimo, member of this committee, AMC.
Denise Bama, member of the committee, AMC.
Tembo Mashaba, AMC member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Naleka, member of the committee AMC.
Opa Munawan, a new member of the committee, in the absence of proper introduction, a new whip of the committee. Thank you.
No, I thought you were there to introduce yourself.
Hendrik Schmidt, member of the committee.
I think all our members have introduced themselves. Can the delegate introduce themselves also?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, my name is Ntanta Kumete. I'm the Deputy Director General. Responsible for hydrocarbons and energy planning in the Department of Minerals and Energy.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Muzim Kize. I'm the Chief Director of Hydrocarbons in the Department of Minerals and Energy.
Thank you, Chief Chairperson. My name is Elizabeth Marabba, Director of Petroleum Police, Hydrocarbons, Chief Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ethel Toyer. I'm from the National Energy Regulator of South Africa. Behind here, I see there are people there, and I don't see any people behind there. Except I'll go back to those on the left. Start here, sir.
Okay, Honourable Chairman, members. My name is Rich Townsend. I'm the General Manager of the LPGAS Safety Association.
Good morning, I'm Estelle Stenkamp. I'm National Sales and Marketing Manager for Total Gas.
Okay. Rabbi Mehta was from Afrox, according to there is also Afrox here. Yeah. Are there people from Afrox?
Mr. Chairman, Herbert Nguyen sends his apologies. He couldn't make it.
So he won't be coming.
He won't be coming.
Okay. So let's take out Afrox here then. I'll go behind there then. Let me start. We want to know everybody is here because we want to know even which people represent the media, if at all. Can you introduce, let me start at that from the researcher there and come down there.
Okay. James McQueen, researcher for the Kuma.
From Nersa. But you are supposed to be closer here because you are part of Jemmy and then you are supposed to formally introduce yourself, not like that. Come here. You must record it here. You can't just hide behind. Yeah. You can't be trying to corner us. You are a very important figure here. Introduce yourself formally, let the members know that you are here. Propose the microphone form so that it's recorded.
I'm Charles Shadela from NASA.
Philip Aguera, PNG.
Kabum Koni, SABC News.
Is that all? Are we done? Okay. If so, let us allow the department therefore to address us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members. Thank you for this opportunity to present to you, the committee, the work that we promised we would be starting at the beginning of the current financial year. As indicated, the 10 members have brought the chief director and the director responsible for this area. But Chairperson, firstly, I guess before I even move with my slides, I'm glad that NERSA are here because we need to be able to distinguish between the part of the presentation that we are making, Chairperson, which is really in respect of it's in respect of liquid petroleum gas. But the part gas, which is regulated by the Gas Act, is what my colleague from NERSA, as I told you, will talk to. As a start, Chairperson, we just thought it would be useful, you know, to always focus on what South Africa is about, what we call the South African realities. And I've got a couple of slides which talk to that. The first one being this iniquity which South Africa is struggling to rid itself of, and that in the World Developmental Report of 2003, we were ranked number 2, but the last report, unfortunately, I couldn't on time convert into a graph of this sort, is indicating that South Africa is perhaps now overtaking Brazil. So whatever that we do, we have to deal with realities that say we've got two South Africans in one. And this also, I
just come through when you look at the employment of people between the age of 15 and 65. Apologies for dated information, but we didn't have access to the latest, but I don't think it, it probably would have changed, but not significantly to warrant anything. But if you look at it, you've got a lot of people in South Africa that are either recorded as non-economically active, non-economic active, or people who are unemployed. And unfortunately, that also differs to, from race. It differs by race. If you also look at the type of dwellings, and the reason why I put this one up, Chairperson, is that it's depending on the type of dwelling, the initiatives that as a government you might be able to introduce to people will vary. For instance, if you're looking at the number of people who are staying in traditional or backyard or informal settlements, it does present challenges for the state to provide resources to those people. Oh, it's cleared up.
I think I should sit this side because this system for me is not working. Can you allow me to sit there?
Essentially, Chairperson, what we're indicating here is that even though, for instance, for the white population of South Africa, again, taking cognizance of the fact that the census 2001, 96% of people stay in formal dwelling, only 56 or 57% in respect of the black Africans stay in formal dwelling. Again, just by way of background, I thought we would also just focus people. There's been a lot of speculation about what actually how we use energy in South Africa. This is the formal statistics of 2001. Based on that, it indicated that the residential sector consumed 17% of total energy used in South Africa, whilst the large part of energy is consumed by industrial sector, 44%. If you combine that with the agricultural sector, it goes up to 47%, followed by the transport sector. And the transport sector is almost exclusively hydrocarbons, which is basically petroleum products. But it's important to note that the residential sector consumes about 17% of the total energy consumed in South Africa. That number has increased to about 18% now. And how does it, if you look at if you look specifically at the household sector and look at the type of energy that is consumed, it is important to note that LPG only comprises 2%. Again, a 2002 figure, so, but it hasn't changed substantially. And of course, other energy carriers, solar was marginal, but we still have a lot of people using vegetable waste material, coal, and of course electricity is 37%, and finally. But if again, based on the 2000 figures numbers again, if you look at what the in South Africa, the household, the residential sector uses energy for, and this is important, Chairperson, because it's supposed to direct our energies in terms of this much required energy efficiency program that we started as a country. That it is important to note this, that according to the numbers at least, that we use energy as in the residential sector primarily for cooking, followed by water heating. I think it's important to note that water heating does not equate to diesel. We heat water to prepare our tea, we heat water to shave, we heat water for all sorts of reasons that we heat water for. And therefore, whatever program that we start needs to address the overall water heating application. And that's 32% of all the energy, residential energy that is used for water heating. followed a distant farm, but it tends to be intense because it's only for what, 3 or 4 months of the year, by phase heating. Phase heating is, it takes about 12% of our total energy. And then of course lighting is 5%. And other applications like fridges, radios and TVs is about 10%. But it's important, of course, to note that different residential sectors do have different needs. So this is an overall residential energy use diagram, but it could vary from sector to sector. But we would like to also believe that the commercial sector could well represent. We haven't done a survey of the commercial sector in terms of what its usage, how its use would look. But it's very likely going to be in places like hotels and similar type establishments. It's very likely that the profile of energy use would be similar to this, because it's a kind of residential place for the rich. I guess when we look at the different applications, as I indicated, cooking, heating, and lighting. Again, we use different things in South Africa. For lighting, in 2001 it was close on 70%. I'm sure now it should be close on 80% with the rollout of the electrification program. But we still have a number of people that are still using candles and paraffin for lighting. But for heating, we use 51% for cooking, 49% for gas, and for heating, we use electricity largely for those two. And really what we are saying is that in respect of LPG, or of gas in general, this is our target area. We have to target a conversion of our conversion for cooking, heating, and lighting purposes. We have to target, we have to come up with programs that it will be aimed at converting that, including moving people away from coal and other unsafe and unhealthy energy carriers, but also moving people away mainly from electricity for cooking and heating applications. So the target of the program is really targeting those two sectors, the heating and the cooling, the heating and the cooking sectors. Although, of course, LPG can be used for lighting, but that's not its primary response. It's not its primary application. Again, we can look at this and say, and from this graph, it's clear that there are differences by race and by region in respect of what people use for cooking. For instance, the white population, again, 2001. They were about 97% using electricity for cooking, whilst for black Africans, the number was 39.3%. So, and I'm sure that graph has changed slightly, has changed a bit, but also in terms of provinces, if you look at Western Cape, for instance, Western Cape is primarily primarily cooks with electricity, followed by Southern, while Eastern Cape, again, perhaps is a reflection of it's about the level of poverty that the Eastern Cape was cooking, only about 30% of them were cooking with electricity. But I'm sure that number has changed with access to electricity, with increased access to electricity. The picture is not very different in the fact of heating. Western Cape and Gauteng leading in terms of use of electricity for heating, and of course the same pattern also in terms of race still applies. What I meant earlier by different residential sectors having demand curve, but we just plotted an indicative demand curve, which looks at the variation of quantities consumed or demanded versus price, that for the high income sectors, it is you know, which are largely the sector here, it is clear that you know, for them, price, the change in price doesn't really affect their demand. While the middle income, although they might be consuming slightly less than the high income groups, they're also not very price sensitive, although I guess not to the same extent as people that have got lots of money. But for the low income households, they are fairly price sensitive. That is, any change in price will change the demand. For the low income, of course, it's virtually a horizontal line. They can only afford so much. There might be a lot of them, of the low income households, but they can only afford so much. But if the price increases beyond what they can afford, they just drop out of the demand. But having said all of that, it's important to note that generally, domestic energy demand is inelastic. What we mean by that is that if people have to cook, they have to cook. When people have to heat their homes because it's cold, they have to heat their homes. When people have to warm water because for washing purposes or whatever, they have to warm water. So what normally happens with domestic demand is that it shifts from one form of energy to another, depending almost exclusively on the price of the commodity concerned. This is very important to note, that sometimes when we come up with some of the demand management strategies, we tend to look and say increase the price. For inelastic demand, you would most likely, anyway, not affect the demand so much by increasing the price, but what you do is that for the poorest of the poor in South Africa, you basically, what you are doing is you're shifting them from what they can afford to something else. So that's why in places like Mpumalanga, even though they now have electricity, people will still use coal for heating and cooking. That is largely, and that is why, I guess, the concern we might then have and say, should we then leave a commodity like gas, which is a possible commodity that could be used to address thermal energy needs, which are the primary needs of the residential sector, or do you want to leave that to pure markets? If the markets were working, clearly yes. But if they are not, as we will indicate, is that if you shift demand from electricity, which you should do for thermal purposes, but let's shift it to a clean energy. Let's shift it to a more efficient and to a more energy efficient application. Essentially, I'm just capturing what I've just said, I guess in a graphical form, that what has been clear is that even for the low income household, for mobility, that is for transportation, as the petrol price increases, people have to get to work, they still have to use the same cars. They pay more, and it takes more from their pocket, but there is very little one can do. For mobility, that demand is virtually inelastic as well. For lighting, there is a degree of inefficiency there that can be corrected, we believe. Maybe my slope might be, some people might accuse me that the slope is too steep, we could lower it a bit, but this is an indicative cap. But the point we're trying to make there is that the demand for the low-income households for electricity, as the electricity price increases, they will fall out of the electricity system for them all. But when they do, what do they fall down to? Do they go down to liquid fuel, which is either pipe gas or liquid petroleum gas, or do they go to coal, like they're doing in the Highveld, or do they even go way down and go into biomass? I think those are the policy dilemmas that this committee needs to be faced with and understand. We also just then thought, you know, we will put this graph. This graph is an indication of the role played by gas in the energy mix globally. There are two gaps there. One that are circled in blue, that's where South Africa is. The other gap that you'll see there, that's Iceland. Iceland has got a very high geothermal application. But if you look at this, other than China, Sweden, of course South Africa and Iceland, you can see that globally there is a huge role played by gas. Yes, there are some economies like Iran, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Abidjan, all of those places where the energy source is primarily gas. So they use gas to generate electricity, they use gas for thermal applications, which is gas as gas. But in the main, if you look at South Africa, it's actually a misnomer. It's one of those countries that just does not have gas in its portfolio, other than Iceland. And Iceland, as I indicated, there is a reason for that. That for thermal, they've got very high geothermal activity, and it's really about heating. And the type of energy they have is very good for the type of application, because Iceland is a cold country. So it's important to note that there is a very big role, that there is a very big gap in the South African energy mix in respect of gas. And that gas could well be pipe gas, or it could be LPG. And that's where we come from. And I think the issue that's to note here, and as people will say, because South Africa doesn't have gas. Yes, we don't. But so do a number of the countries that are indicated here. Yes, some like the Middle East, the US and places, they do have their own indigenous gas resources, including South Africa. But some of the countries here don't. Turkey is one such a country, for instance. And as you can see, Turkey is almost 100% reliant on gas. Having said all of that, we have coal in South Africa. That's the energy carrier we have. We don't have much water to speak of. We don't have oil to speak of. We have coal. So when we're proposing a shift to gas, we need to take due cognizance of the impact. So what we are saying is, I put up there a plot which is looking at the trade balance. The brown line, which is the line below the line here, is the trade balance, which as you can see, it goes into negative territory, starting around, I guess, late 2003, but it jumps back. It goes into negative territory. And I think colleagues here know that as a fact, that's the area we are in. So when you look at trade balance, but you exclude oil, you can see we would have a net positive trade balance if we had oil, but we don't. So essentially what we're then saying is that, yes, there is a need for South Africa to introduce gas, like all other economies of the world. But we need to take due cognizance of the fact that this gap will widen. So having said that, let's move to LPG, which is the question that we are bringing to this committee today. As far back as 2004, we've indicated the desire to introduce LPG to the poor. However, we noted that, unfortunately, there were a number of barriers. The first barrier, of course, would be about price, which I don't think I need to convince this committee that the price of LPG is, all you need to do is go to a garage next door and you'll find out how much it costs. And it varies. We were doing a survey yesterday, how much it varies. But what we are then saying is that before you can do anything, I mean, the poor will not shift from a cheap energy carrier to an expensive energy carrier. They just will not. So we have to find a way of reducing the current industry-wide high prices. But whilst maintaining some level of profitability in the industry, the intention is not to make businessmen poor in doing that. So how do we do that? One way of doing it, like the PayPal do, is investigate the sharing of logistics or investigate different ways of cylinder management. Once we've done that, if the price comes up significantly, there's still a problem in South Africa that says gas appliances are just not accessible. Gas stoves are far more expensive than electric stoves, which I find very strange, because generally in the world it is the opposite. And of course, cylinders. This is a serious anomaly as a country which produces so much steel, that unfortunately we have to import cylinders. And it's a reflection, I guess, of our steel prices, which is cheaper to buy a cylinder made from South African steel to buy it from Portugal than it is to buy it from South Africa, when the cost of producing of that cylinder is 65% reliant on, dependent on steel. So essentially we still need to do that. But of course, people have got communities have got a view about gas that needs to be addressed, so we need to ensure that we do that. And then of course, focusing on safety. But there clearly is a large number of people in South Africa who don't earn any money or who are classified as the low-income household, that perhaps we need to then have give them an opportunity to exchange free basic electricity for free basic energy. For instance, this was an example that they used, that perhaps we could give 15 kilograms of LPG per month for free in exchange for someone who might, and then they might want to buy electricity for lighting. But the reality that we face is this, that I know there's been lots of reports about high petrol prices in South Africa, which I think mainly come from people who don't quite research, because petrol prices in South Africa is amongst one of the cheapest in the world, except those countries, of course, that subsidize petrol. Especially if you take out government taxes, because taxes got nothing to do with regulation. I mean, taxes would always be there whether it's regulated or not. Yeah, and I know most people, when they look at the tax issue, they tend to think that it's about regulation. It's got nothing to do with regulation. So if you look at our prices, petrol prices, our retail prices, if you take out, what we say is, even with the taxes, even with those government taxes, which are fairly substantial, our petrol price coming out of a refinery at the deemed price, which is called the basic fuel price, of 7.22 per kilogram, so they have converted this number to kilogram to be able to compare properly. It retails at about 11.26 per kilogram. Compare that with LPG, which is priced using the same DST, 93 DST, correctly or incorrectly. But it comes out of a refinery at 6.90. And that number that I have there of 22 rand per kilogram is the price that I've used using some of the list prices that we have of 200 rand, of 200 rand per 9 kilograms. Yes, there are places, I must admit, there are places that sell the 9 kilogram for 150 rand. But in the main, and I'm hoping that the committee members themselves would also be buying gas, so they would know what they pay for gas. We know of one place that sells it for 345 rand per kilogram. 345 rand, sorry, per 9 kilogram. That 9 kilogram cylinder. At 200 rand per kilogram, the price, at 200 rand per 9 kilogram cylinder, it comes out to 22 rand per kilogram. Clearly, that is not affordable for the poor, or affordable for the economy, because that is far more expensive than electricity. So essentially, that's what we're dealing with. That's the reality.
The markup there, we estimate around close to 136%. But why is it the case? I just copied a slide from a presentation made by Wild Orchard in 2004. The reason for this are many, but one of them is that we're dealing with a value chain where you've got multiple handling of the process. It comes from refineries, transport distributors. From there, it goes to dealers. That's where maybe with the distributors, they fill the cylinders. It goes to dealers. It goes to stockists. It goes to before the household comes to buy it. Even if it goes to the forecourt, it goes via another filling operation and goes to the forecourt. There's a lot of transportation. And in the middle, everyone takes their margin. Of course, the number that you see here, you don't have the slides. I just added it later as an afterthought. But what are we proposing? We're proposing a different model. A model that simply says transport energy, not steel. So what we do is we're proposing coming up with exclusive areas. This is for domestic applications only. Coming up with dividing the country into different material zones in which we then allow a certain level of monopoly, I guess it's much the same as we do in the sector of past gas. But what we do in here, it becomes a regulated monopoly where you bring gas directly from the manufacturer or from import. You transport it into an area where you actually have cylinder filling and management, and the cylinders are owned by that particular company and they are branded for that particular company. So in that area it's only those cylinders that move, and then those cylinders are delivered directly to consumers and collected from consumers. And I've got some prices at the bottom there, but again these prices were based in 2004 numbers, so the petrol price was still very low at the time. So please forgive me for that. So what we then did was that was the idea. But before we go out and we thought before we go out and regulate, let's test the efficacy of this approach. So we did we commissioned pilots in Pretoria at Astridville and in Secunda at Tendesina. And basically what we set out to do was to connect 30,000 households in both those locations. Even though the primary aim was about LPG and setting LPG price, but because of the issues relating to electricity, we are also looking at the possibility of seeing how many users would switch from electricity to LPG for thermal purposes. But of course, because of a number of reasons, there were delays in starting the project, but the project eventually got off the ground. And in Astridville, there has been a significant uptake of LPG, but initially mainly from the older parts of the township. But now because of load shedding, it's actually taken off in a number of ways from in other parts of the township as well. But in Tembisida, because of for some reason, they were impacted more by load shedding. The uptake has been fairly high. So we just thought to share this consultant report with yourself. It's in the presentation, so I won't talk much in detail to it. But what we're indicating is that in Atrachville, we now have about 18,000 households that have been registered. And again, this is a consultant's report, so there's reference to DME there. And it gives you a background in terms of what the project is about. And of course, it also talks to the delays that emanated. The BFP, that stands for the bottle filling plant, which was commissioned in October 2007. That there were a number of delays delayed the project. But what we are saying there is that we've been able to show that we can deliver LPG at 9 rand per kilogram. This is at the current high crude oil prices. We can deliver LPG for 9 rand per kilogram. That's the main theme of this report. So just, again, if you don't mind, just keep the two slides. We'll come back to the two slides. Just go to this one. Just give you some facts about LPG, I guess. That we've got 5 countries in the main that are responsible in Africa for production of LPG. Algeria, Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, and Angola, I guess, in the main. But in South Africa, we produce 3% of that 16 million tons, largely from refineries. It's a byproduct of refining operation in South Africa. Well, until 2005, when we got gas, 2005, I can't remember which year it was, when we got gas from Mozambique. So some of it now comes from that gas, I would assume. But in the main, it's a byproduct of refining. But in terms of consumption, it's notable that Nigeria produces 10% of LPG but only consumes 1%. Whilst Morocco, on the other hand, only produces 1% but consumes 17% of LPG. But again, of note, with all our energy demand, because we tend to be the biggest energy consumption country in Africa, we only consume 4% in respect of that 9.7 billion tons. Where does it come from? What is it used for? In the main, in the rest of Africa, it's used mainly for domestic purposes, 90% 2000 and 89% in 2006, with some increase that is emanated from transport, to 3%, increase to 4%, with industry being 7%. In South Africa, the story is different, I guess, as I've indicated earlier. Just thought I would just show this slide as well. You don't have the slide as well in your pack. That it varies. The type of energy that's used for thermal varies from region to region, as I've indicated, with, of course, wood primarily being used, for instance, what is this? Northern Cape? It's not a problem. Again, a lot of it depends whether you have it. Like KZN, of course, rainy, and also Eastern Cape, a lot of wood is used there. Gauteng, of course, is paraffin, and which is strange. But that's the point I wanted to raise. But in the main, the point I wanted to raise is that in South Africa, it's amazing, with all that LPG, that 4% that you saw, is largely used for industrial applications. And high-income sectors use it mainly for leisure, and of course, with some low-income sectors that are using it. So, I think I've indicated that, but except the point that if we're to import, we are likely going to be able to import LPG from Algeria, Nigeria, Angola, and Egypt, with some pairs that could be imported from Saudi Arabia and Qatar. So, in respect of the proposed pricing, now if you can go back to your two slides, which is, I guess, what the committee asked us to come here and present, is that what we are proposing is an approach which is very similar to how we price petrol. But it's also intended to promote importation of gas. And so what we start with is we start by saying let's not perhaps interfere with the refinery gate price at the moment, but make sure that the price that is charged to the consumer is cost reflective. And if we use the import parity basis, again, so that we can allow for the importation of gas and reduce the number of middlemen in the LPG value chain. Having done that, this is the structure that we're going to be proposing. And we've drafted a regulation, Chairperson, which will be out for public comment. And its basis is really the structure that we're looking at retaining a gas for the time being, refining gas plus, until we can move to true import parity pricing, and then allow for primary transportation to the areas as I've indicated, and allow for the wholesale margin, which we believe is a decent wholesale margin, allow for a retail margin, which is a filling margin, and allowing for a distribution margin, which is now what we are then saying that consumers should have LPG delivered to their home rather than them having to go carry 9 kilograms. And of course, if you add VAT on that, we believe that even with the current high prices of over $100 a barrel for crude, we should be able to still deliver at 10.72. I thank you, Jacob.
I think I'll start from there because I don't have to be up and down. Thank you very much for the enlightening presentation. Yeah, it still is a lot to think back in the gas sector of our economy and energy. I will allow you to indict your number. I have a hand here next to me, Mashaba, and the next Honorable Matuela, Honorable Spice, Honorable Marel, Honorable Schmidt. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have got three questions. The first one I'll start with the slide that is up currently. It would have been nice if we could have been able to be given the difference between the current pricing structure and the proposed to see what value does it bring in as it is, just the comparison between the two. The next one is the issue of probably if there wouldn't be any job losses in between when you're cutting the number of middlemen could be intended. Is there any impact that could it be on job losses? I know that it might also be meaning creating jobs at the lower end, but we need to compare the two. The other one is that besides the expensive nature of gas appliances, there's also the effectiveness and the efficiency. I'll make an example that currently you'll find that for a household, ordinary household in a rural area, they need 2 times 19 kg gas cylinder for them to take them through the month. Just for one 19 cylinder for a deep freeze, and the other one will be for the stove without lighting and other things. But also looking at the efficiency of those appliances you'll find that with the deep freeze, it's not as effective as would electricity have been. Just if I could get those clarities and how it could be dealt with.
Thank you, sir. I see you had a pilot project which we as MPs, especially members of this committee, were supposed to be part of it. But up to now, I think my voucher is now lost. And I believe that none of us who has ever received this, yes. And I must say, it's so very unfortunate. Whenever things are switching to us as black, prices are jumping sky high. When we were using paraffin fridges and gas fridges, they were very expensive. And electricity was very cheap. And the minute we switched onto electricity, the appliances became very expensive for us. The same goes with the houses. Houses are far, far, far high. The prices are skyrocket high for us as blacks. I don't know. Maybe we are a cursed nation. I don't know. What I wanted to say also was, with this gas, I don't see any way poor people will be able to use the gas. Unless this will not end up on paper, it will be a reality. So that people can really be able to use it, because really gas is expensive. And the other thing is, we were supposed to go about educating people, helping the department to educate the people out there, to say gas is safe, it can now be used. But up to this day, I am not able to can help people out there to say, please let us switch to gas because electricity is very expensive, it is safe and blah blah. But unfortunately, I really cannot help our people. I think I'll just stop there. Thank you, Chairman.
The next one was let's allow Jenny here. In the context of the problem that you are facing, the issue of power generation, that you have a shortage there, I thought the presentation should focus especially on alternative means, short term. I'm just thinking, because when you present, you focus on residential supply, and you have right at the beginning indicated that actually manufacturing consumes more. In your indication, it goes up to 44% if include agriculture. Now my question is, wouldn't gas maybe relieve us of this dire need for alternative energy, now that we still need to build power stations that will take 7 to 14 years? If you were using gas for manufacturing, smelters, mining, all the industries, wouldn't that relieve? Because that is where the concentration of consumption of our electricity. Is gas not an alternative then?
Another speech. Thank you, Chair. My question also relates to the last slide. Specifically, if I understand correctly, the imposition of pricing controls with regard to gas. Just one question with regard to the figures that are mentioned there. Are they hypothetical figures, or are they the actual figures that are being proposed as an initial price? And then secondly, just per unit, is it per kilogram, per liter? What is the unit that we're working on? Is it 10 rand 72 per liter, per kilogram, or whatever? And then the last question would be, we all know that gas is not controlled at the moment, but what is the average price at the moment, and how will the introduction of these controls actually affect the market?
Honorable Narayan, I think it's you.
Yes, maybe my first point is that I'm thinking about the earlier stats used. They are very old stats, 2001, and I don't know why don't we have new stats, because we may be hammering on thinking that we are going through a problem, only to find that the stats are misleading. So it's my first question. And the second issue is that, you see, when you, we know that there's a crisis, but obviously in modern economies, electricity is the basis for attracting communities because it's easier. When you use electricity, it's more user-friendly. And whatever community which they want to convince and to change from electricity to any other thing, it will be a very long protracted exercise. They are trying to convince the people that the gas is more user-friendly. When we know that in earlier days when we grew up, we're told that the gas is far more dangerous than any other thing. So for me, it's going to be difficult for us to go back to communities and convince the communities. So what solutions are there, even if you want to convince people, especially in housing, it's difficult. So you can use gas as an alternative. For example, I use gas for cooking, solely in my household, and that is not a low-income household. But in low-income household, for children and the way they are cramped in their household, gas becomes dangerous. So I just want to say, you can come up with a good pilot, and you can come up with what a good solution. But when society is geared towards a particular direction, they will always adhere to what they are used to and what they know better. So I just want the department to juggle around those issues such that we can satisfy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only three issues. Do you, and if so, when do you intend implementing the proposed business role model you have on page 10? Secondly, I think that question has been answered, is when do you intend regulating the price, on which date? Thirdly, I saw your program, or the program which you featured on Sunday night on Interface, where the deregulation, the possible deregulation of the fuel industry was discussed. Don't you think there's any room in where I think you propagated basically a maximum price with a kind of a managed deregulation of the fuel industry? Is there any scope for following that kind of procedure or principle or methodology with regards to LPG and testing it in that market to see whether it will in fact work in the fuel industry as currently, as it is not complied with? Thanks.
Thank you. I think I also have my small input here. Actually, the studies in the world have shown that if you want, especially to address the problem of domestic energy needs, one of the most useful direction is to apply what we call cross-subsidization ethically, taking into consideration the geographic energy space. And have you ever considered that in your pilot project and all your initiatives? The second question is about the inelasticity of transport. In a workshop that was conducted by four departments, including DNV in 2001, it was shown that actually South Africa is consuming a lot of these crude oil gas. It ranges up to 84% of anything in the country that consumed by transport. Of course, you've shown here in the slide that in terms of gas, it's only 3-4%. I don't know whether it's going to be in all of Africa on average or even in South Africa. But indeed, how would the gas
for instance, because there is a project going on, especially on fuel cell technology, to switch over to gas, especially in terms of countries, we actually be the bulk consumer of our energy. What have you considered as department in terms of knowledge, in terms of developing this fuel cell technology sector to attract our growth economy, which not only inside the city developed, will address that only the terms of fuel needs, but it will also bring in some more important markets, because fuel cell technology depends on platinum, and we are the only country rich and world exporter of platinum. So it will also bring in some kind of return for our platinum. You said that because of the problems of electricity, you are looking at the poor communities moving down to mass alternatives, which is exactly true under the circumstances. But haven't you, because this is one of the things that we looked into during the 2001 workshop, that once we can stabilize the economy, the RC, which has been in the report, that probably we can then start thinking about investing in a gas pipeline from there, because they are in Africa, they have the biggest reservoir of gas, which has not been tampered during the time of war. And if we could create a corridor from DRC to our country in terms of gas, have you ever thought of how far it has gone? I just wanted to also question your assertion that South Africa is the cheapest oil petrol price. I do not agree with that. If you can elaborate where you get it from, because just to tell you, some of you are telling me a very good experience. When they moved from here to Kuwait, they found petrol so cheap that you can't even think about comparing it to what the cheap price is. So I don't know what you meant if you want to say petrol is cheap. So those are some of you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleagues will assist me in responding, and I'm also hoping that SL from NERSA will also add, especially on the question relating to Pagia. But I think starting, I'll start from the top. I think the first question asked by the honourable member, myself, was the difference between the current prices and the proposed prices. I think, as I indicated, the current prices are varied, and they are not set, but in the main, the average price that we got when we did our SNEP survey was, as I indicated, that, remember, the price we are proposing is about, including VAT, would be about 1072, but at the moment, using the SNEP survey we did, was about 22 rand per kilogram. Again, it varies. I mean, some members might I buy it for 245 rands in terms of 9 kilograms. So it's actually much more expensive than that. But in our SNEP survey, and of course there might be other people who would argue that they do buy it for 150 rands. They buy 9 kilograms for 150 rands in some places. But it varies. As indicated, I think Kizo will add, because he's the one that did the survey. Job losses. When we change this market, the current market, the point we're trying to raise with this slide, What I'm trying to raise is like that in South Africa, the current market for LPG is a niche market. If used by the rich mainly for bribe purposes or whatever, it is not a mass market. Based in this number of 2004 numbers, I'll talk to why we've got 2004 numbers, not up-to-date numbers, but these numbers were, and again, as I indicated before, was Wild Orchard in 2004, that the market was only 330,000 tons in South Africa. It should be at least 10 times that, at least. For the kind of energy that we consume, it should be, I would even argue, 20 times would be our market. So when we look at job losses, we're talking about proposing a shift from you looking at gas as a niche in terms of LPG, moving it into a mass type market, because the economics would, you know, we're hoping that the economics would allow us to do that. But in doing that, the jobs would shift. Because we are dropping off middlemen, whilst we had a whole business of transportation of cylinders, we are saying perhaps that now we move to a transportation of the liquid, which would be cheaper rather than moving steel around. But that, of course, will impact, will shift one type of job to another job. So, but we're hoping that in the overall, we will create more jobs, especially in the communities that are the poorest communities at the moment. Gas appliances, I think efficiencies, I'd like to talk about efficiency of gases, or efficiency of applications in detail. We are not proposing that we should move from lighting with electricity to lighting with gas. We would actually say, don't even consider doing that. The appropriate application, the appropriate energy carrier for that application is lighting, is electricity. And we should aspire that everyone, every person in South Africa should have electricity for lighting. Every community, without fail. That should be the aspiration. That's not what we are saying. We're also not proposing that we could have TVs, you know, computers, and all of those applications being connected to gas. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that let's consider in terms of efficiency, energy efficiency, gas is far more efficient than thermal, than electricity for thermal purposes. I'll give you an example. If we import 1 kilogram or say 100 kilograms of liquefied natural gas, say from Qatar, and we burn that to in a steam turbine to convert to electricity, assuming the most efficient gas turbine, combined cycle gas turbine, CCGT, the best efficiency you'll get for that conversion is 60%. Having converted, so what you're doing is you brought a 100 kilograms, what converts into energy is 60 kilograms. That's number one. And then you need to transport it, transmit it from wherever you're generating it to the point of use. The most likely, you're going to lose about 7% in transmission losses, give or take. Sorry, I'm not trying to put anyone in the corner here, but I'm just using global numbers, 7%. Then you have to distribute it into homes, transform it down, and whatever that you do, you lose another 12-15%. So, by the time it actually gets into your house, you've lost a further, say, 20% out of that. So, the 100 kilograms that they started with, you lost 40 kilograms by just as you burn it, the efficiencies, in terms of the CCGT, the most efficient way of burning gas, you lose 40 kilograms. You lose another 20 kilograms just transporting it. When you switch on an electric stove, Jefferson, you have to switch it on and wait for it to warm up. And because of the type of plate that you have and the thermal conductivity between when you're cooking with electricity, where all you're doing is heating a plate, which heats another plate, the efficiencies of that could be as high as 50%. What I'm saying, Jefferson, you start with 100 kilograms of gas, but what gets into your food for cooking could be as low as 30 kilograms from 100. But compare that with gas, if you're cooking directly with gas. The thermal efficiency, besides, when you switch on a gas stove, the heat is there instantaneously. You don't wait a minute, the heat is there. And because of the, it's intended for that, it heats directly. It's a direct thermal contact. You would be looking at efficiency of about 80%. So you'd have to ask the country, if we are going to be moving to importing gas, should we be using it to generate electricity? Or should we be using it for thermal application where applicable? So that's the point. And I think my colleagues, both from LPG Association and NELSA, could add to that. But gas appliances for thermal application are the most efficient application. The price is another story. And then go to Member Tivela. The participation of members. We have to apologize, Member Tivela. The intention was always to, I think I'll let my colleagues respond to this. Especially the one that is responsible for the pilot, Ms. Maraba, is here. She will explain why she didn't invite the members. But the idea, honourable members, is not to move poor people from a cheap energy carrier, electricity, to a more expensive energy carrier, gas. That is not the idea. The idea is that we would like to correct the price such that there will be a natural move from electricity to gas for thermal application. In the text of the question asked by honourable member, please. I think first is hypothetical. The reason why we decided not to do what we normally do, just come up to a desktop study and come up with a regulatory approach, but to do a pilot, was again to address that very question. What we've indicated, honourable member, is that if you go back to the slides, which are called the consultant's report, we've indicated that we can, with the currently, if you look at the pricing model then, we can deliver it for 9 rand 9 cents, excluding VAT. That's what we proved. But of course, we still have to engage with the industry and come up with a number that might be more suitable. So it's not a hypothetical number. The numbers that I indicated, the apologies, they are actually per kilogram. I've converted all these numbers that you see there are per kilogram numbers. What is the average price? I think I've indicated is about 22 rand per kilogram. What is the effect on the market? I think I've also spoken to that one of the members, is that it's going to be a shift in terms of strategy from a niche product to a mass base, to a volume product. So we're hoping that the overall impact to the industry would be positive rather than negative. The honourable member Naren asked the question, why are we using old statistics? Unfortunately, as a department, we can only use official statistics. And unfortunately, those are the most recent official statistics I had at my disposal. Yes, there are. We do have unofficial statistics, which do indicate some changes, but you know, not enough to us to actually depart from the use of the official statistics. We are hoping that we're going to change that and be able to publish energy data on an annual basis. Use of electricity, yes. As I've indicated, every person has a right to have access to electricity. It's a right. I mean, I think the department, that would be a shared view that says, our minister would say, we're still striving to have universal access to electricity. This is not about changing. But what we are promoting is the use of an appropriate energy carrier for an appropriate application. That is what we are trying to promote. Appropriate energy carrier for an appropriate application. That's what we are trying to drive. The question by Honorable Smith. There were three questions. I think I'll allow Kila to answer some of the ones that I might not have. The date of regulation, I think really this is by the start now, because there's no, as part of the process, we do need to engage with stakeholders extensively on this. So we are going to be gazetting a draft regulation, hopefully in the next 2 weeks. We intention not to have gazetted it by now, there were some delays. But we will gazette that for public comment, and then we'll be engaging with stakeholders extensively. So, and that process normally takes about 3 to 4 months. So we, at the end of that 3 to 4 months, hopefully we would have something that is workable and be able to have it promulgated. And again, will it be a deep price as we do with petrol? Possibly unlikely, most likely be a maximum price. So yes, we will be moving to a maximum price regime from the onset on this one. The question asked by Honourable Member Dekan, in the context of power sources, why are we not focusing on industrial application? Again, Honourable Member, I think the issue for us, as I've indicated, is about application. We still need to look at the industrial application and see whether there are certain uses of energy that lend themselves to gas. If there are thermal uses, like I've indicated, in the hotel industry, that sector is really about cooking. They have to have hot water for a number of floors, and everyone wants to have hot water each time they wash. And it's basically, you know, because of the kind of people they have, they come in basically 24 hours or 16 hours a day. So they probably have to have hot water, and they most likely, most of them provide food, so there's a lot of cooking. So the commercial sector, specifically again looking at the hospitality industry, it lends itself to gas. But industrial, we will definitely investigate that as time comes. And then of course, Jefferson, you had a number of questions. The cost subsidization issue. Again, I think, Chair, we would like to crawl and walk and then run. That yes, there will definitely be a need once we've looked at this energy portfolio properly. There might just be a need to move to use one sector to cross-subsidize the other. But as we start at the moment, we would like to see without subsidies what would be the correct price, what would be the uptake, and then of course we'll then look at issues of cross-subsidization later. I mentioned the issues of inelasticity of energy use in the transport sector. The use of gas in the transport sector, I think I'll ask SL to please talk to that. The gas is used. I mean, there's CNG, compressed natural gas, almost all the public transport in India, for instance, in Delhi in particular, is all on gas, compressed natural gas. So, you know, that is a possibility. And for us in fuel cell technology, it's actually an interesting technology because it's about beneficiation of platinum. And yes, I think the department is looking at that. The pipeline. Again, I'd like to get SL to add on that because we've discussed this, the two of us, in detail. And we've been talking to the World Bank. They are also interested in seeing whether we can't use... There's a lot of gas that is flared in Angola. I think some people put it to the tune of 7 trillion cubic feet of gas that is available currently, which is being flared, that we could, if it's possible, put a pipeline and link that market to that gas, which is currently stranded gas, and link it to a market in South Africa. It is something that has been proposed, but yes, Jefferson, unfortunately, it is a long pipeline, cross-border pipeline, so it does raise all manner of questions. But it's something that jointly with the World Bank, we've been talking about. I think whilst my colleagues are answering to the other question, I'll throw up a graph here about the last question you asked, Jefferson, which is about, I didn't say the cheapest price, and said it is one of the cheapest classes, except those that are subsidized. And I'll show you proof check. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'll start to talk with you with regard to the issue of price. Because we really look at prices, and they range from, say, 132 rand for 9 kilograms to about 3.5. And we look at petrol station. And sometimes the excuse being used is that a service station is like a convenience store, so one would expect it to be more expensive. But on the other hand, our argument is that the service station is in most cases the only available retail shop for people to buy LPG. And therefore those prices, they still stand as the retail prices that people are experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And some of them are not very far from refineries, in like the cheapest one, I think it's about 60 Ks from a refinery. So, with regard to the first question, which was talking about the difference between current and proposed pricing structure, our proposed pricing structure, as a structure, talking of the structure, not necessarily looking at the one time, is the one that seeks to streamline the value chain and assist in ensuring that we transport the gas rather than transporting steel, so that we get closer to the end user. And therefore our structure is, as indicated, the 10.72 per kilogram versus the current 22 rands per kilogram price. And then with regard to the, I'll just talk to a few things there. With regard to the prices, when that was put forward, when they are switching from one appliance to another, then things become expensive. It is part of the suppressed demand, in the sense that people, it's not that there is no demand, it's a question of affordability and other issues. And part of the problem is that when the masses now, when things are being mainstream, get to the mainstream, and then you find that the prices increase because of the increased demand, as we experience. So I think even if this also talks into the question of us wanting to promote the use of LPG, also talking to the current situation of replacing electricity with LPG as a challenge, in that we're talking of this LPG, I mean like LPG, but the problem that we soon get ourselves into is the sheer availability of LPG. As you know, that you get it from this refinery and we can import it. But also with regard to importation, we still have got challenges in terms of the import infrastructure, the handling of LPG at the port. That is where these challenges are. But we're also in constant engagement with industry to be able to ensure that there is LPG that is available. And also, that is why I also want to regulate the price to say, because anything that is available but unaffordable to you, it amounts to being unavailable to you. And the other thing, as we said, the intention to implement the new model for is that the regulation is part of the implementation of this new model. Because this regulation will then force the industry to adopt a particular the value chain, the optimized value chain. But as said by my CDC, we're still going to interact with the industry and make sure that we make sure that in terms of the model, the implementation, it is something that is going to be implementable at the end of the day. With regard to the safety aspect, we take due cognizance of the safety aspect of LPG and the need to educate people about safety. That is why even in the implementation of this model, we'll have to also to look around the issues of having concessions so that we are able to take care of the safety aspect. And safety is an integrated approach is required here. Because we've experienced this thing even with paraffin and other appliances, in the sense that with the proximity of like the informal households, the informal houses,
still gonna face a challenge in the sense that whenever when a house in the upper class people when there's a fire in the house, chances are the next house won't catch a fire. But within the low income households, whatever if a fire whether it's caused by a candle, paraffin or LPG or whatever, the chances are that it's going to result in the burning of a host of other houses that are just as unique. And then the last thing is that is concerning the fuel cell technology, and maybe to talk a little bit on the gas power issues, to say that there is this question of the availability of the gas itself, something that you still need to work upon, because it's no use to say you're promoting something that is not available in terms of the propulsion of vehicles. And the fuel cell technology that we are looking to going forward in conjunction with GST. Thank you. Maybe Marava can answer concerning you not inviting the people.
Thank you, sir. The way we implemented the project was to start by consulting the local communities and the local councillors and the mayor. We have done that, and in the process of implementation, we also recruited youth from the community to facilitate the awareness campaigners. We were trained by the OCC Gas Association. We also invited the local councillors and they also responded for the safety campaign. And we also held an introductory meeting where the mayor for Tembisile and the councillors were responsible for introducing the project to the local community. The same was also done for Atrice and the local councillors from different wards were responsible for introducing the project. But we rectified the problem by introducing the members of parliament to also come and finally put a seal to the project by officially launching the project once everything has been put in place so that we can actually show that the project is a success and it is endorsed by the city. Thank you.
I did not mean that we were not invited. We were given vouchers so that we can go and use those gas cylinders and prove that they are up to standard. Yes, thank you.
We still have two presentations to come, and I think we can drop everything there. If there are any questions, we can raise it in members of the department outside. And unfortunately, we won't be able to. Do you have something to
add? Can I just talk to this slide, the question you asked about the cheapest price? There is an organization in the world, which is a German organization called GTZ, that does annual reviews. Checks all the prices in the world and presents this report annually. This is a 2007 report. They did the latest report. Yes, the crude price is still cheaper because it's based on 2006. But what I was referring to was that if you look at, there are actually four categories. They come up with four categories of countries in terms of fuel. Category one, which would include countries like Venezuela. Those countries heavily subsidize fuel. And they also happen to be oil producers as well. What they do is they sell finished product at a price lower than the price of crude itself. Because they have it. But again, you have to ask Jefferson, is this the best form of use of government revenue? Because, you know, if they have to, because it might be other people who are it might not be the government itself that's producing, but for them to use the crude oil revenue to subsidize price, is that the best use of the country's revenue? You might ask that. But they are there. They are called category one countries. Then we have another category of countries which also subsidize in a way. That is, they sell finished product at a price cheaper than the crude price plus the refining margin. The country that is of a benchmark, which again is which we've always used, and I think most people would use, is the U.S. The USA is that country there, which is a benchmark. Why the U.S.? I think for us, in the sector of the U.S., in the sector of the U.S., which is a green line there, the U.S. has decided as an economy that it does not tax energy. Is that the right approach for the states? Perhaps for them it might work, but might not work for most countries. But if you compare ourselves with then the country which has got the freest economy in terms of trade, of petrol, again, that number, these numbers are all in US cents per liter. If you compare this number, 63, unfortunately, crude nowadays costs more than that. Because what you need to do to calculate that number, this red line, all you do is you take the current crude price divided by 159. The number 159 is 159 liters per barrel. It converts the crude price to a cent per liter. That unfortunately crude today is more than that price. But if you're looking in terms of benchmark, that is the U.S. there. So where is South Africa? South Africa is here, which is 85. Yes, we have taxes, right? I mean, that is not. But if you look at in terms of what other countries have done, the most expensive country, one of the most expensive countries is taking. So when you complain about our fuel price, yes, it climbs with everyone. When you look at this graph next year, it's going to look very similar in terms of the structure. It would have shifted up a little bit. So I think sometimes when we argue around the price, it's more an emotional thing than. Now I'm talking about a global price that you could get it cheaper. Yes, you could get it cheaper if you can subsidize. But is that the best thing for the state? Resources. That's
going to
be the question. Thanks,
Chair. Yeah, we can argue the whole day about that because unfortunately I'm in energy very, very deep. Yes. Actually, I can give you a very good example about that. If it's a developmental state like ours, exactly that we have to, this is the direction that we have to take, especially in terms of our poor vast majority of people. But you see other things they do that. Let me give you a very good example of Malaysia. Malaysia bought 80% of the engine here. And you know, our petrol price, they keep on rising. But you see, if the Malaysians, their price is very, very cheap because it's subsidized by us here. So these are some of the things that we have to think about. You see, in this global market, that is exactly what you do. You look at how do you cushion your own people and then exploit other resources as well, in order to cushion your people. Cross-subsidization principle is exactly about that, to make access for poor masses to the type of commodities that they otherwise would not have had in a developed state. That is very important. We have to sit down and discuss this issue, especially around energy. Because energy, that is the center of everything. Otherwise, thank you very much for the presentation. There are a few things that I just want to make as a comment. So some members have made a very important comment about manufacturing industry. That, you see, for instance, you were giving a very good example of the thermal effectiveness of using the gas instead of electricity. And some members here, they raised a point in terms of why smelters that consume a lot of electricity than any other sector of our society. Why do they not? Because actually smelters, most smelters, they use furnace. Furnace is direct heating and blasting. You see, and which is exactly the thermal use of energy. But they use a lot of electricity in order to run those furnaces. Why would they not be converted probably to gas? Because that's exactly where the country would have a big benefit. We have been told recently that the manufacturer in South Africa consumes 37% of our electricity in South Africa. And if you, as they say, the biggest of the smelter. And so if we can look into all those things, I think we could do very much better than we do. The other important comment that I want us to make is that the president just addressed recently that time has come that we don't do business as usual, but we do it unusual. So this committee, I think it has got to therefore monitor what you said, because you've got very good suggestions about how to move our society to thermal use of gas and all the kind of projects that things suggest that we will have you will have cheaper the pricing in the way if you transport gas through to our consumers. This is actually the British experience. That's what they do in Britain. Gas is at every house. You don't have to go anywhere. You get it in a house, you can just switch off like electricity and use it for thermal purposes. I think that's a good rule to suggest. But we as the committee will have to therefore monitor how soon are you going to be doing it and delivering on bundle of homes. Again, the question of gas, these are some of the things that the committee must keep in consideration. The question of this gas problem, of course, DRC, of course, these are some of the things, but once it applies, one of the resolutions that was taken in that workshop was that Eastern Cape depends on Quebec, the western part of South Africa, including Western Cape, depends mostly on nuclear, which is only 7% of South Africa's total energy output. And they were saying that with bringing the gas from Angola on this west coast, it would give a very big delivery of energy towards the western side of South Africa, and therefore is the coal transmission line from Mpumalanga down south. So I think these are some of the things that we have to think about in the study. Yeah, I think I'll end up there as a comment. Thank you very much for your presentation. And we will allow the next presenter to come in. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
Is there no way that you get these people, and you see the thing of moving up and down, it's very successful. Where are the people of this, the technicians, to come and really fix this thing? I thought that they would come up, whatever. Yeah, because really it gives me a problem to be commuting up and down. But, yeah, nevertheless, I think the next presentation now is NERSA. I think we will have to be very mindful now of time, both presenters and members. It's quite a time to still have another presenter after Nelson. And so we will have to try to be concise in order to be able to cope up with time that is available to us. Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. I think, yeah, the best approach, as one member is suggesting, both the presenters that are left to present now, they must present before we can interact with them in the interest of time. So after you, the other presenter, which is the next one, they must also give their presentation, and then members then will interact with you. Thank you very much. And then, but try to really also be concise. Some of the things that are available in the notes that members can read and just present things that are very important for us to know.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Etel Foyer. I'm a member of the Energy Regulator, which some of you might know is the Board of the Energy Regulator, and I'm primarily responsible for PASCAM. The Chairperson of the Energy Regulator, Mr. Machila, and the CEO, Mr. McQuena, apologize for not being here this morning. Due to prior arrangements, we had organized and advertised a public hearing as a regulator, and we would not form a quorum if all three of us were here today. So that's why I'm by myself. However, I'm assisted by Ms. Ozengini Nelomondo from Gas Pricing and Compliance, and Mr. Charles Schrebdela from Communications. We only became aware of today's hearing a few days ago, so I apologize if some of my slides may appear off topic, but I'll try and improvise and make sure that we go back to the topic of today.
You say that you only heard about this only yesterday?
No, a few days ago. Oh. I think it was Thursday, and we were not sure of the topic, if it was LPG or pipe gas, and I'll get to that in a moment. So, also, I would like to extend the congratulations of the Energy Regulator to the new chairperson. It's great to meet you, and the new members of the committee. We look forward to continued fruitful interaction with the parliamentary committee. As you know, NERSA regulates electricity, petroleum pipelines, and pipe gas. And I'm glad that the Deputy Director General, Mr. Gumede, pointed this out. We do not at present regulate LPG. However, we are accountable for Parliament, so we would like to encourage the committee to call on us whenever there are energy-related matters that you would like briefing on. All right, I will make my presentation available. I apologize for the for not having it in printed form here today. I would like to, I'll race through this slide. It's basically an outline of what I'm going to try and tell you today. It's the background to NERSA and the role of the gas regulator therein, the LPG market in South Africa, and the objectives of LPG retail price regulation, and some observations from a regulatory perspective on that objective. Then we're going to show you how and where NERSA can assist if required to do so. And obviously I'm flying the flag of the regulator here today, so I'd like to convince you that there's a trusted energy regulator established by DME, we are ideally positioned to regulate other gas forms that are out there. Okay, NERSA implements three sector-specific acts, and that's the Petroleum Pipelines Act, the Gas Act, and the Electricity Regulation Act. Now, the issue of liquid petroleum gas is an interesting one because it would fall under the Gas Act when it's transported by a pipeline and is in a gaseous form, but obviously the L stands for liquid. So there are some gaseous LPG networks, for instance, in Port Elizabeth, very small ones. However, when LPG is transported by pipeline and is in a liquid form, it would then mean that it falls under the auspices of the Petroleum Pipelines Act. Just to make the point once again, LPG in cylinders is not currently regulated by NERSA, although we get lots of questions. we noted, therefore, the Minister's budget speech in 2007, where LPG retail price regulation was brought to the fore with great interest. And we also noted that, obviously, at present, the Minister, via the Department, is the regulator of ex-factory prices for LPG. I won't waste much time on this. Basically, just to reiterate that we regulate pipe gas. So as soon as any gas, LPG, LNG, orbit methane, synthetic gas as produced in Secunda, or natural gas goes into a pipeline, it falls under our jurisdiction, shared obviously with the various authorities regarding safety. And we cover certain activities. And what is important to note is that what it excludes. It excludes both the very upstream parts, exploration production, and the very very downstream parts, which is reticulation, mainly by municipalities. So everything in between falls under our jurisdiction when it comes to pipe gas. Okay, we've had some challenges, and I think this is very important to the many issues that Mr. Gumede has raised this morning. How do we introduce gas without an existing market? Which one is first? Is it, if we have supply of gas, will we then get a market? Because many industrial users will say, well, I'm not going to convert my facilities to gas if I don't know that I'm going to have supply. And likewise, exploration companies or oil companies are not going to look for gas if they don't know that they can actually sell it. And obviously in South Africa, because of our history, electricity has been relatively cheap, which ironically became an impediment to the development of this more efficient and cleaner energy source. So some of the challenges that we find is we are expected to promote competition. However, there are few natural gas finds to date. Most of the gas at the moment comes from Sandentamani fields in Mozambique. There is a special dispensation for the pipeline from Mozambique, which almost guarantees a monopoly for Sasol for access to that pipeline, which obviously also makes it difficult to promote competition. We are required to stimulate investment. However, exploration and production are regulated by PASA, which is a part of the Central Energy Fund. So there may be problems there of coordination. And also, it's very difficult for us to stimulate investment when natural gas is perceived as unable to compete with electricity. And obviously, we have problems with information asymmetries like any other regulator and like the department mentioned as well. Just comparing liquid petroleum gas is natural gas, and I'll explain later on why this is so important and why we keep hammering on this point. It's because we are aware of the advantages of LPG. It is clean burning. It is a very effective source of space and water and cooking, heating, water heating and cooking. But we have traditionally approached this from the vantage point of natural gas. Now, all these advantages to LPG apply equally to natural gas. With the exception that LPG can be transported in cylinders, whereas natural gas normally is piped, but it can be stored and transported as compressed natural gas. Now the reason why we focus on natural gas is that we are aware that LPG is very expensive, that domestically the supply has been short. We've had shortages last year. And the import and the storage facilities in terms of infrastructure are in short supply and they are overstretched. The cylinders are expensive, and as the figures from the department and our own research show, there is a great lack of effective competition at the retail level, leading to these very, very high markups. Now, it is true that LPG is used elsewhere as a fuel for the poor. However, we don't support that notion, and there were, I didn't mean to put it quite so strongly. We may have some questions around that approach. Seeing that members of the committee also raised the question, Honourable Makhubela, regarding, is this an energy source for the poor? LPG is more expensive in South Africa than elsewhere. Also, prices tend to be sticky downwards. Whenever the oil price goes up, the LPG price goes up, but when oil price comes down, when that ever happens, the LPG price doesn't come back down as well. So the other concern that we have when we are talking about LPG as a fuel for the poor is that the drivers of LPG prices are, for instance, the oil price and the exchange rate are likely to be outside the scope of tax regulation and will therefore be difficult to control, and hence we cannot guarantee that the poor will have access in terms of affordability. It should also be noted that earlier this decade, the World Bank had did a study and recommended that in South Africa it would be more appropriate for industrial users to use natural gas, and that then the LPG that was displaced by this could be used by the poor who are without alternative energy sources. So specifically not the poor who already have access to electricity. The concern that we have is that when we displace electricity with LPG, we are taking a relatively currently inexpensive source of energy when it's available, and replace it by a dollar-denominated, very expensive source of energy that is in short supply. And the committee has also raised, very rightly, the issue of safety, which I'm not an expert on, and I don't want to make any statements on, but we are very aware that part of the department's concern is to, objective, is to move the poor away from much more dangerous energy sources such as paraffin and wood and coal, etc., to LPG. Now, if those are people who don't have electricity, clearly we would support that as part of the social consideration. Now, our business is really in economic regulation, and whenever a new regulation is mooted, we would like to share our experience. From economic textbooks, we all know that economic regulation is aimed at mimicking the competitive outcomes, particularly when you have a natural monopoly. So because there's no competition, prices will not go to a competitive level, hence they must be forced to go to a competitive level. And one of the concerns we've identified with the LPG project, for which the regulator did approve the use of energy efficiency and demand-side management funds, is that we think it's very important to match the solutions to the problems that have been identified. And when we looked at the problems identified in the policy statements on this matter, the White Paper on Energy Policy lent towards saying that actually LPG is expensive and was really aimed at electricity for all. Clearly, we have moved on since then, and we have learned a lot. And in the budget speech of 2007, the minister pointed out that the poor have limited access to energy, and even when they are electrified, they will use paraffin and low-grade coal. Now, in that context, LPG and natural gas are clearly better alternatives. Now, going back to matching the solution to the problem, this may seem like a very semantic proposition, but it is very important from a regulation point of view. If we want to regulate LPG because we want to increase domestic use of LPG, then our concern would be it's not necessarily a pro-poor energy source, especially if it displaces electricity. If regulations aim at curbing excessive prices, so for those who use LPG who do not have alternatives, or even those who do, regulation could be an answer. And there, obviously, we would warn against the enforcement challenges. There is quite a large number of outlets, and the cost-based pricing that is proposed may be quite difficult to enforce. A maximum price or price transparency might be an easier way to start. Then there are methodological problems. Obviously, with import parity come a great many distortions. And we could argue that, but I don't think that is the purpose of today. Another question that was asked by Honourable Mr. Kakana is that can we ameliorate the electricity crisis with gas? With natural gas, we could, yes. But with LPG, it will not, I think the Minister's budget speech also indicated it would not displace more than 500 megawatts out of the current installed capacity of 42,000 megawatts approximately. So it's not really a viable alternative. It is, however, used at the moment. Open cycle gas turbines are under construction. There are two that have been spearheaded by the Department of Minerals and Energy that were given to independent power producers. They will be using heavy fuel oil, which is an expensive source, but it's aimed at perhaps in future converting those to natural gas. And similarly, Eskom has applied for two licenses that I'm aware of, also approximately 2,000 megawatts in total of open cycle gas turbines, also using a kind of fuel oil, but with the option to convert to natural gas later on. Now, if the longer-term objective of the pilot project, which I understand from the department is indeed the longer-term objective, is to create a market for natural gas, or in the words of the Deputy Director General, is to ensure that appropriate energy sources are used for the appropriate application, then it would provide a catalyst for the provision of more efficient and more sustainable. Unimportantly, much cleaner energy. But what we would find very encouraging about that, if we have these pilot projects and people start to use LPG and they become comfortable with it and they understand that actually they're using very little LPG for cooking, it goes a long way compared to their electricity bill, especially as we will see electricity price rise in the near future. This will hopefully crowd in some investment in gas exploration to supply this new market. So, in a way, the egg or the chicken is being supplied here. And from that point of view, we're very, very excited. As mentioned, LPG has a role to play in serving energy needs. LPG prices are regulated at the factory gate, and we recognize and we concur with the department that there is clearly scope to reduce the markup further downstream at the retail level, that is. Now, seeing that piped liquefied petroleum gas is regulated by NERSA, it would only require quite a simple amendment to mandate us to regulate this critical part of the value chain. A separate observation is it's quite important that we separate policy and implementation. What should be done should be separate from who does it and how is it done. And traditionally, implementation is done by implementation of the type of price regulation as proposed. Is done by a regulator, whereas the policy is determined by the minister, obviously supported by the department, and by Parliament. So again, we would like to thank you for the opportunity to come and report to you, because we are accountable to Parliament, and we take that very seriously. For the implementation then, this regulator that I represent has many advantages. Because it is a fairly new regulator, we have been established based on best practice principles of transparency. All our meetings are open to the public, and the public attends. we have to be impartial. We are accountable to Parliament, and we also, perhaps more importantly, have an enforcement structure in place for petroleum product purposes as well as for piped gas, with an ability to impose fines of up to 2 million rand a day. All right, so I just wanted to humbly point out that my presentation here should not be seen as any turf war or attempt at mandate creep. Parliament has the prerogative to ask whoever it wants to do this kind of regulation. We are merely submitting that there are areas where we can assist. Obviously, input to amendments or regulations and pricing methodologies. And also, we would urge you to please use the expertise that we have gained, sometimes through trial and error, in the food industry over more than 10 years. And we would like to leave you with the message that NERSA, as a clustered energy regulator, is ideally positioned for implementation. there were some questions outstanding from the previous presentation, which Chairperson, if you want me to answer them, I will, or perhaps you want me to take questions on this presentation later.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Linda, I did do a lot of the next is Total Gas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honourable members. I'd like to start off with the presentation, just get some background to it. In February 2003, this all started with the DME and the United Nations Development Programme. We had a workshop together with the LPG Association and the World LPG Association. And the outcome of that workshop, there was a decision that the main barrier to entry was the price of the appliances, which would need custody. And it was also agreed at that stage that the LP gas itself should not be subsidized. And in Parliament 2004, in response to the Minister's plan for clean, efficient energy to displace unsafe fuels such as coal, wood and paraffin, that was affecting the health of the people, causing multiple shack fires, killing babies with ingesting paraffin, etc. A move was proposed that the industry look at doing something about displacing paraffin. In February 2005, a pilot took place, which was aimed at a larger quantity than 90,000. But 90,000 houses were converted around the country. They selected particular areas, very much like what Mr. Gumidi suggested, that they could isolate, so there wasn't competition in the areas in exchange of cylinders. So they all worked in separate areas. And a package was put together that was subsidized by the industry. They were looking for a switching fund to subsidize the appliance itself. This went ahead, and the outcome of that particular project, it proved without doubt that the appliance was the barrier to entry because people just flocked in to start buying gas, and those people are still continuing to buy gas because in those areas depots were set up and gas is still being sold in those areas. But in October that year, the pilot was actually closed down. Then in March 2006, the crisis in the Western Cape hit with the Kuberg power station problem, and Eskom approached the association and asked whether the industry would be prepared to move the project as we had it for replacement of paraffin to displace electricity in the Western Cape. This was quite a massive project, and it was recognize that there were two separate markets, and this is what we've been talking about. There was the low-income housing market, which we addressed for the Karapien displacement project. And then, of course, there's the middle and upper income market, which is the existing market. With Eskom, the industry agreed to tackle both of these projects. Unfortunately, there weren't enough stoves in the country. There weren't enough cylinders. There wasn't enough, well, there was sufficient product at the time. There were two approaches, and the upper income project was converted some 6,000 stoves. Now, there was involved people like Macro and Massmart, and they brought stoves and things from throughout the country, from the other stores down to the Cape, and some 6,200 stoves, electrical appliances, were exchanged for gas appliances. And then in the low-income housing, which was a completely separate project that was tackled by only four people that were in a position to actually tackle it, two initially who completed their project of some 80,000 houses were converted, and then the other two came in, two black empowerment companies. They came in and they continued with the project, which and this project still continues. Although it was closed down, it was discontinued. Up until that stage, the country had some 25% surplus of LP gas. The refineries, or it's the next line I'll come to, but the refineries produced some 330,000 tonnes, we were consuming. The market was consuming about 330,000 tonnes of LPG. The refineries can produce about 420,000 tonnes. So there was an oversupply of LPG of 25% at that stage. But other problems took place which affected the upper income market. Was the Chevron refinery shut down. There was a power supply from Eskom, and that was where the main supply of LPG was coming for the upper and middle income bracket. There was shortage of cylinders. There weren't sufficient cylinders to go around. The petrol price then escalated quite substantially. That means the gas price also escalated. And there was a problem with Eskom saying they're converting people from one power source that's in short supply now to another one that's in short supply, because the 25% surplus was in a matter of months absorbed. It was that dramatic, the change of in this particular project. So that's the background, and these are the two pictures showing that how the people queued. This is the total gas low-income housing project. How the people just queued and flocked in to exchange their cylinders. This project, by the way, still, although it stopped as a project, they're not putting any more cylinders in because Eskom has stopped. The DSM fund is no longer funding this particular project. But they established depots in these areas. And these depots are still being supplied by the four people, which is Aprox, Total Gas, Kaya Gas, and Bull Gas. And they're still being supplied, and these people are still using LP gas who got these stoves. Okay, the benefits. There was some, this is an exercise that was done afterwards by Professor Lloyd, and these are his slides that he used at the World LPG Conference late last year, in November last year. He's at the Energy Research Center at the University of Cape Town. At that stage, we've done about 70,000 homes have been converted with the cookers. The saving to Eskom over this period was some 60,000 megawatts, but that didn't only include those 70,000 houses, it also included the middle and income, because middle and upper income houses, because they just measured what the saving was at Eskom. So, and he said this is more than all the other domestic demand-side management interventions put together by Eskom. And suddenly the real benefits of LPG in the developing common economy became very apparent. So let's just directly, these are his two slides, they're directly quoted from him. The equipment cost in the low-income housing the two plate stove, regulator hose, and the first cylinder full of gas was 550 rand. It cost us 550 rand, which was subsidized by the GSM fund. The cylinders were put into the market by the industry at a 50 rand deposit. So for 50 rand deposit, these people got a cylinder, regulator hose, and a two plate stove, and it's full of gas for the project. So this cost Eskom the GSM fund some 40 million rand for all the homes in the low income housing project. And in providing, if you had to provide 60 megawatts of new generating capacity, this would cost you 1.3 billion rand. So that ties up with what Mr. Gamedi was explaining, the advantage of using gas directly rather than electricity. So to put up a new power station to generate 60 megawatts of power is going to cost you 1.3 billion, as opposed to 40 million. So the capital saving converting to LP gas is enormous. Now this is Professor Lloyd is here in Cape Town, and I'm expecting to speak to you people if you want to. Right, gate price, we've had quite a lot on this already, but it's linked to the 93-octane petrol, as we all know. In 2008, in this Western Cape project, in the low-income housing retail market, the price of LPG supplied into that market was 7.50 per kilogram. That includes that at the time. If we look at the current gate price now, and Mr. Gamedi and I have got different opinions on this particular price at the moment, the CEF price, we're in disagreement with this, so we'll have to check it out. The CEF price at the moment is normally 1 month behind, so the price I feel that was quoted by Mr. Gamedi was the February price, and I've added the extra 61 cents onto this. But that's beside the point. It was just I wanted to draw a comparison between where the gate price has gone to in terms of what the selling price was at the time in 2 years ago. There is an extra 35 cents that is added on by Sasol, it's called the Sasol differential, that's added on at the gate. So the people picking up in their tankers have to pay that. And those prices are excluding that. So there's a bit of a difference, but what the point I want to make is that the price has more than doubled. The gate price has more than doubled in that time. So it would normally also double the selling price of LPG. As we know, crude oil has now reached $100 a barrel, and the rand is now at 8 rand, so we can expect the gas price to go up even more if it remains linked to 93-octane fuel. So the LP gas price will continue to inflate. We have interface meetings, and it's quite important that we have a look at this. Are held on a regular basis between the DME and ourselves. So every 2 weeks we have a meeting. Important topics that are frequently discussed. First of all is the price, principles of price regulation. We may not talk price. We're prohibited by the Competition Commission to actually talk price. So the DME has undertaken a confidential survey, which is currently underway at the moment, with the industry players, where they're supplying all the information that Mr. Gamedi had on his slides earlier on, of the various levels at the transport, at the margin level, and etc. And wholesale level, etc. So they're filling all those in, and they will provide those to the DME on a confidential basis, and they will collate them and come up with an average figure, which then the industry can talk around. And then obviously we talk about the advantages and disadvantages of price regulation. And the other main thing that we talk about quite extensively is the demand having exceeded the supply. Demand now is way beyond what our refineries can actually produce at the moment. So importation of LPG is now essential. A terminal is required. A major terminal is required. All right, on price regulation, I think we've covered some of this. The confidential survey is underway and the second interface meeting. The low-income housing price, to answer your question earlier, this is a sub cross subsidy. The industry has a different price, as you see further down, with a memorandum of understanding which is agreed during the paraffin displacement pilot project that was run. There was an agreement between the industry and the DME that they would sell LPG at the paraffin equivalent price of less 2 rand. So it's 2 rand cheaper than paraffin. Those prices are still being used to the people that, both on the Eskom project and those people on the paraffin price, and I understand that the DME project are also using that particular price, which now going to actually reduce that price, I think. They're selling below that price. But the current price at the moment is 14.7 is what they are selling. I checked with Total Gas, who are here. They are currently still supplying into Langa at that price on that particular project. Okay, on the retail price, there's a couple of points I want to just make here. There's two prices I'm going to discuss below, and they've both been discussed extensively. These are the DME prices, and you heard Mr. Gamedi talk about the 22 Rand. We've spoken about the retail price varying between 17 Rand and 25 Rand. It's a sort of range that you'll get. The gas distributors. Now, distributors are people who actually break bulk, fill cylinders, and distribute them to dealers and other people. You can buy gas directly from them, and they will deliver something like 20 Rand a cylinder that they will deliver, but you can go and collect gas from them at 17 Rand a kilo or thereabouts. That also, it's not regulated, so, and depending on their infrastructure and where they've got to transport gas to, it will range between 17 and 18 Rand, I mean 15 and 18 Rand that you'll be paying from a distributor. And these are in line with sort of international prices at the moment. And so they have a delivered and a collect price. The convenience stores, that's the area that's creating the problem, the garages and other convenience stores, 24-hour stores. We know traditionally all products are substantially higher if you go to those stores, for your milk and your bread and beans or whatever else you want to buy there, including gas. They mark up, they have a policy principle that they mark up, if they're going to invest in something, they want an extra 50% round about that. And certainly if you look at the 25 Rand to 17 Rand, we're talking about a 50% increase in price at a convenience store. Now, price regulation, as we mentioned, I think will reduce the after-hour supply of gas. These people, if you're going to reduce that supply chain, this is going to be one of the victims of the supply chain. You won't be able to buy gas off the house.
Just a minute. We have our great chair of the committee. He is a president. He has to attend a rich meeting. But before he leaves, let me say an error corrected in time is an error no more.
Yes.
Uncorrected, it remains a festering thought. So this is our new first meeting actually,
yes.
In the committee with him as the new appointee of this committee.
Right.
And so I apologize that I thought that he has been with us before because we have already had engagement last week.
Right.
I thought I took him as part of us already, but I just missed me that this is his first committee meeting.
Okay.
So this is Honorable Munarang, you will be seeing him more often now when we come in general.
Right.
But now he's rushing to a required meeting, so he has got us to be our excuse.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right, and then we have the small cylinders, the KDAC type cylinder, which is a privately owned cylinder. And these you can take to your hardware store or wherever to get them refilled. And there's additional labor and equipment required there. So you generally find both distributors and the convenience stores will charge more for those particular refills. So the prices might even be higher than 25 Rand a kilogram for a small refill. A point on this particular one, on the convenience store, We had a workshop a couple of weeks ago with which Mr. Mukhizi attended. It was with the DME and ourselves. This particular issue came up that that possibly these convenience stores would move out, and the industry seemed fairly confident that they'd get other people in the supply chain, other dealers, different type dealers, like the builders warehouses and micro stores, who already supply at a much lower price than that. But other dealers would pick it up, hardware stores and that sort of thing, would fill, maybe fill that gap. So it might not be, but certainly that price, I agree with Mr. Kennedy, is far too high. The 22 rand he speaks about. But so yes, there are prices, and that is the range of prices, and we do discuss this with the at the interface meetings with for the DME. Right, storage is a big problem. Our supply is entirely dependent on, or was entirely dependent on our refineries, our refining capacity.
You can summarize in terms
of time now. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, on this one, we need to have an import terminal. Let me see. Okay. The basic energy. We've been promoting this to all the municipalities. The DME have revised the policy to include from free basic electricity to free basic alternative energy. We had a workshop with Salga, and a lot of the municipalities attended, and we visited most municipalities who have now accepted to introduce free basic alternative energy, but into non-electrified areas. So those people who have no access to electricity are benefiting from it. And at the moment, residents benefit from some 55 rand a month. Unfortunately, this is not going so much into the gas market, but into the paraffin market. But nevertheless, the people are benefiting from that free basic energy thing, which was originally started by the minister. Okay, RDP housing, I'd just like to touch on that. This is a huge opportunity to start introducing gas, cookers and everything into all these new houses which we're putting up. It's not happening. And we've met with quite a few of the municipalities, and they have not responded to us. They're really not interested. And I think it's one area where we can start educating homeowners into the use of an alternative free safe fuel. All right. And then in conclusion, for this winter, which is a problem, we were worried about the supply of LPG. The refineries assured us there's no planned shutdowns for this winter, but we don't know what unplanned ones or what Eskom is going to do in terms of supply. A private import facility has been put up at Richards Bay, but it's small, and it's for that supplier only. We need one for all the players in the market. New additional road tankers, quite a lot, because part of the problem of putting that import terminal up is the gas arrived there, but the tankers, insufficient tankers, because they're doing their normal deliveries, they couldn't get the gas away. And so 500,000 branded cylinders, new branded cylinders, will be brought in for this winter, and that was 175 million rand investment by industry, and that's a sort of annual kind of investment that they put in. The DME is negotiating with Sportnet for the reinstatement of rail tankers. We've lost the rail tankers because they haven't been used, they've been turned into other service, diesel and petrol, and etc. So we want to see if we can't get them back into service. And we want everybody to have two cylinders rather than one, because in case of a shortage, at least you've got about 4 to 6 weeks supply with a separate cylinder. And then, of course, as we heard, the retail price is going to be regulated. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, let's give the opportunity to the last presenter quickly, so that we are left only with 30 minutes to
No, we were not asked to do a presentation.
Oh, okay. Okay, so then I'll allow members then to interact with the previous two presenters. There I am, I start with Honorable Shiro, the United States Affairs, and then I will come to Honorable Zalela, Honorable Ketane, Mashaba, in that order.
Thank you, Chair.
Just to follow you, because I think members are going to ask questions from both of you, so you must just record the input.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Mine is on Gas Safety Association. Well, Chair, I think unless something tangible is done, for the availability of gas, I don't think it's feasible for communities to be able to use gas as an alternative. But because of our electricity prices, we do need an alternative. Firstly, the price and the safety of gas are one of the problems. And the second thing is the project that was done, especially the Western Cape in March 2006, when people were asked to give their electric stoves in exchange for gas stoves. I think that project needs to be rectified. People are still having problems because they were left with gas stoves that are still not working. And now it's difficult for them. It's even more difficult because they don't have gas, they don't have electric stove. And thirdly, I don't know, is it possible to regulate something that we don't have? Because the scarcity of gas doesn't mean that we will be able to regulate gas.
Can you put your mic on, please?
I will ask questions on both presentations, but I'll start with the latest one. On the issue of the appliance being a barrier to entry, can I get clarity on that? When we're talking about appliances, are we referring to stoves in general, or are we referring to a specific stove with a specific make with a specific fit? I'm leaving that question to this of the 500,000 new branded cylinders put into service at a cost of 175 million. I want to know whether these cylinders we are talking about, are they a specific make, specific brand, specific company? And the question that I'm asking after that is, are we not creating another monopoly if that is the case? If it is a specific brand, specific make, specific chip, are we not creating another monopoly in this instance? Then, Chair, my next question is on the upper income household retail price. The issue of the fact that these convenience stores don't want to be regulated. If their current price is plus minus 60% higher than the distributor price, it is clear that for them it's about making profit and exploiting communities. So what are these other plans that are being looked into to make sure that if the convenience stores are refusing to be regulated, what is the next possibility? Will we be able to make this gas available to people? Then, to NESA, on promotion competition, I'd like to know how many providers we currently have. I think I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Okay, the next member.
Thank you.
To both presenters, this is an earlier question, and we just want to kind of amplify it, because our presenters all the time don't seem to be understanding our argument. The argument is this, that we run short of surplus electricity in South Africa. And we have said residents are only total number. I mean, obviously we've got more residents using electricity, but in terms of capacity to consume, it said that they are only consuming 15%. As compared to manufacturing, that is consuming 37%. So is it not logical that if you want to save electricity, the starting point would be those that are consuming more electricity, which is manufacturing? And we made the argument that in our economy we are striving to reach 6%, more than 6%, because at that percentage we'll be able to create more jobs. Given the problem that the South Africa's economy is growing, but it's the jobless economy, because the jobless growth, because it isn't creating more jobs. So while people are focusing on how the economy can create jobs, one of the areas that have been identified was beneficiation, that a lot of our raw material are going overseas without gaining value. And we like our raw material from mining industry. Given the fact that South Africa for a long time has been a mining economy, a mining industry. In other words, our development has been based on, from the start, on mining. So raw material from agriculture and mining, why don't we beneficiate it here so that we can create more jobs and develop our economy? Now, given that argument, that's why we're saying when we get presentations about how to save electricity, alternatives and so on, all the time focus is on residents, the people who are only consuming 15%. We don't hear much about this 37%. And we were saying, yes, the first lady who presented now said natural gas, yes. But the point is that you think that even in residence, the part that is consuming more electricity is heating. You're heating water for Jesus, or you're heating food in your stove. And we're saying in smelters or manufacturing, that is also the same heating. Why don't we hear much about how gas can save the situation there? That's the question we're asking. Lastly, and this is shorter, the pipeline from Mozambique. Again, we hear about this pipeline. How far it is, we don't hear. I mean, we must get a progress report. I would imagine there are people working at building this pipeline to local government. I don't think you've got 100 people from Mozambique following throughout South Africa at this building of the pipeline. But how far it is, because the supply of that pipeline is going to be the main supply of gas in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is to NERSA. I think on the presentation slide number 10, that was more especially on second bullet, where there's an indication that South Africa is the most expensive in terms of LPG gas. Now, the question is, at least if we could have been able to have a slide where we could make some comparison to see how bad it is, and probably to investigate as to what could be the cause. Is it the issue of backing to subsidization, as in fuel and others, as it was presented? The other one is the drivers of LPG prices. If we're using oil and petroleum price and the exchange rate, is it compatible? Is there no possibility of trying to look at what else could be used instead, as it is indicated that it could be outside the scope of the price regulation? And the next one, Chair, is I'm looking at the issue of the price. Whilst we've got the three presentations, now I'm trying to evaluate whether are they talking to each other to get us to the point where we could be able to be either of support or making a view on the three presentations, but I'm looking at the price itself. If you compare the usage of electricity per month on an average household versus the amount of LPG gas that would be needed and its rate, you will find that the one who's using LPG gas will have to use double the value. You might end up having to spend 400 rand instead of spending 200 rand on electricity. Now, how do you go out to promote this? For instance, there could be an issue of like the ETV who went out to the GME offices during the night and said, just have a look, the lights are all on and they're promoting efficiency. Now, it will be the same thing where we'll be the first one that MPs and individuals will be asked, have you converted? Which will be the first thing that I might be the last one to convert. Now, I'm looking as to the practical cost side that can help us to promote this in the honest way. And it could end up being perceived as if maybe we're just trying to promote LPG gas just because it's not that popular at the expense of the price. Thank you.
I also have some small input here. Myself, I've had some little bit of confusion. I heard that Mr. Kumet was talking about the LPG gas, and then there was an input from NASA that the LPG gas was not the best way, was a little bit more expensive. The natural gas was the best way. And then you came, you liquefied PG, you watched LPG, you came to say that no, LPG, I didn't now catch who is representing what. You talked about the LPG, LPG gate prices. Now I got confused, I think I need to be clarified. The LPG you are talking about is different from what Mr. Kumura talked about. It's different from the natural gas. What exactly is, I have a confusion now. When you talked about the Sasol LPG gate, as far as I know, that goes with natural gas that runs from Mozambique up to the gate, because I know there was a problem of a gate flange around between Mozambique and South Africa. So I think I need to be clarified. I just got confused at the end that who is talking about what. Yeah. That's my first question. Then there was a question where you said that you are looking towards rail tankers being brought back. Why were they withdrawn in the first place, if at all? We need to be, to get the reasons at the committee so that you know. Probably that reason for which they were withdrawn is still valid even now. So what was the reason when they were being withdrawn initially? This is a general, because if we're talking about energy, I haven't had since I came into this debate of energy mix and the interventions that may be needed to save the situation. I haven't heard, or probably it is because it's expensive and expensive exercise, but I've never heard anybody from whoever the stakeholders are talking about also the possibility of what we call magnetohydrodynamic generators, which are some kind of technology used also to add on in energy generation. I've never had anybody talk about that, or probably they are not very much used in South Africa, because in the world, actually, they are very much used to magnetic dynamic generators for energy generation. Okay, those are my two questions. Anybody can start.
Yeah, I'll kick off. The first question that whether LPG gas is suitable for the country, I'd just like to make the point that the poor throughout the world cook on LPG gas. The view amongst the poor people that LP gas is gas is dangerous is propagated by the press. Whenever there's an accident of any sort with gas per se, it can be exploded in a mine or anywhere, it's always gas explodes. And this causes people to be afraid of gas. LP gas, we have 5 accidents a year, it's a lot, but we have any sort of deaths at all with gas, on an average. The gas, the cylinders are exceptionally safe, they make a very high standard, which is one of the questions about the cylinders. There are standards for the cylinders, they're pressure vessels, they're regulated by the Occupational Health and Safety Act, the Department of Labor, and the Bureau standards that they have to comply with. So the cylinders themselves are safe. The gas doesn't explode in the cylinder. It will not burn back into the cylinder. The cylinder has to be heated to over 400 degrees centigrade. We've had of the 80,000 and the other 90,000 cylinders that are in the marketplace, we've had 2 lots that have been in fires, not caused by the gas, but the cylinders have not exploded. They've recovered the cylinders out of the fire. Cylinders have been heated to over 400 degrees centigrade before they explode. So gas is exceptionally safe. It's a lot safer than electricity. The amount of deaths that happen with electricity is far greater. If you check with the municipality, you'll see. Those don't get reported on. I mean, they don't get their press, not like gas does. To come to the exchange program, that was a problem where the people handed, initially we started off with people, Eskom wanted people to hand their stove in, but they soon quickly realized this was a problem. Fortunately, all the stoves had been marked, we'd handed them in, and a lot of people claimed their stoves back, and they were given back. But that part stopped very shortly after the beginning of the project. They weren't taking the gas electric stoves in afterwards. Allowing the people, so there might be still some people that didn't get their stoves back, but I should imagine those have all been scrapped by now. It's 2 years ago, 2 years ago. But that was a problem, and it was dealt with by Eskom at the time. Okay. The appliance, there was a question of the type of stove that was being put in. The type of stove that was agreed, that was negotiated between industry. Industry started off with the paraffin displacement project with a single cylinder with a screw-on cooker top on it. The DME objected to that. They thought that people needed to get something more substantial. So it was agreed between the industry and the DME at the time that there would be a two-plate stove, and they made by different people, but they're all along the same design. That design was put into the market, so everybody got a similar kind of stove. That was just a stove that was selected. It was a relatively cheap stove. The whole package, as I said, was 550 rand. That included the regulated hose and the stove, which I doubt you'd buy that stove in the retail market, Dame or Macro, for that price, that package. So those were actually the cost prices that they were looking at. The 500,000 branded cylinders that we put in, these are cylinders put in by the industry. They're put in by Easy Gas, Total Gas, BP, Easy Gas, Sol Gas. There's a whole number of people who have bought cylinders. That's just the pool of cylinders that have been put into the market. The cylinders, as I said, have to comply with the international standard. The South African Bureau standard is the ISO standard. It's actually called the 4706 ISO standard. So they have to comply with that standard, and there is a code of practice regarding cylinders, the Bureau standard code of practice, which they have to comply with as well. So they have to come in with certificates from what is commonly known as an authorized inspection authority to certify that those cylinders have been tested and are manufactured to the specification required. So you needn't worry about the cylinders, but there are branded cylinders. There are people bringing in, of that group of cylinders, there was some, I think 30,000 cylinders brought in that would be saleable cylinders that people would sell. So anybody can own cylinders and anybody can import cylinders. There's no restriction on that at all. And the fact that the convenience stores don't want to be regulated, that's not in fact correct. The convenience stores have a policy that when they buy a product, if they're going to invest 5,000 rand on a particular product, they want a certain return on investment. And it's higher than a normal store because they're open all night sometimes or late at night. So they are a convenience store. So if they're not going to get the return that they want on that, say, 5,000 rand they're going to invest in gas cylinder, so say, well, we put it into bread or milk or sweets or something else that's going to give us the return rather than put it into gas. But there are, as I said, I believe there'll be other people that might pick up that market.
Any other input from
Adia? Chairperson, I'm sure Ethel would like to respond to others, but I just thought I'd just make one comment. I mean, I know people like to talk about LPG is dangerous, this, that. Energy is dangerous. I mean, when you drive your car, you've got multiple explosions inside that engine. It is not the energy that's the concern. It's the appliance that is used for the energy. And it's got to be, we don't know how we can communicate that, because even with paraffin, it's not necessarily the paraffin, except that if people drink it as well. But it's some are reported, some are not. We don't get reports of houses that are burnt because of electric faults. But there are lots of houses. Mine was one of them. I think that's the first point that I'd like to make. The other one, I think that, Chairperson, I know you've got limited time, and the honourable member Kitan has been asking the question, why focus on the domestic sectors and not on the industrial sector? The issue around beneficiation. I think the challenge in South Africa, for instance, when you have something like chrome is chrome oxide, it exists as a chrome oxide. Unfortunately, that thing you can't melt for anything lower than 2,600 degrees centigrade. That's an unfortunate fact. Even if you put other things, calcium, lime and things to actually reduce the melting point. Before you can do anything with chrome, with chrome, which you've got 80% of the world's reserves in South Africa, unless we ship it out like it is, like raw material chrome, for us to process chrome in South Africa, there is no existing metallurgical process other than an electric arc furnace that can raise the temperature to the required 2,000 degrees centigrade. Gas cannot get you. It can't get you there. For the glass furnace, some of the furnaces that make glass, the passes, those ones you can get there clearly with gas. Then the question tends to be how clean the product will be. So, yes, whatever member, we have to focus on the industrial sector. We have to find applications. Unfortunately, we have not, I think, put effort to find those applications, which we still do. We need to do that. But perhaps the smelter might not necessarily be the answer because of their requirement. It's even worse with things like an aluminium smelter, which is a salt. You need to melt to keep the salt molten. So that's one other issue. I think the one last issue, Chairperson, that I'd like to clear is the confusion around natural gas and LPG. It's the same. Gas is gas. It's just that with natural gas, you need to invest in a lot of investments up front. You need to put pipelines, like the pipeline from Mozambique and Secunda. But it don't just end there. You need to then pipe that to every household. There is no one who would put that investment unless they know that you've got a gas stove. Unless you know that you've got a gas heater, unless you know that you've got a gas geyser. So what comes first? You need to have the market first. And what we are proposing, and I think it's been done in most places, you start with a gas that is portable. Once you have a critical mass, you can then look at getting natural gas in. But it's the same thing.
Lesser has been done in terms of addressing, but it hasn't been addressed in terms of the great price of Sassol. What is it?
Right, you want me to answer that on the gate price? The gate price, the refineries manufacture LP gas, 2% of the barrel of oil is LP gas. It comes off, and it varies around 2 and 3%. It's in that sort of area. That gas is collected and it's liquefied. LP gas liquefies very easily under pressure. That's why you can't run it long distances in a pipeline in a vapor form, because as you increase the pressure, it liquefies. They then sell it to the people that come with a road tanker, and they pick it up in liquid form in the tanker, you know, under pressure, at the gate, at the refinery gate. And that's the price the refinery charges for that LPG, is what we refer to in the industry as the gate price. It's what you pick it up at the refinery. From then on, you get your wholesale price, and then once it gets into and the retail prices from there, once it's put into cylinders. So the process it goes through. Yes, Mr.
Do you want to add on that?
Thank you, Chef. Not necessarily the gate, not the gate price, but also the other issue. Because we are looking at LP gas being imported, and therefore for this import parity paying the price. When you go in England, then there is a location advantage for that of between England, for example. So you see, but you still have a gate price. That should be added when it comes to the issue of your own pricing, like the country doing for the fuel. But I think, on the other hand, there is this fundamental question that has been raised in terms of being able to promote LP gas, where I think we should be clear concerning the confusion that everybody that maybe can be seen to be created. The fact that you are saying, for example, the question that you also raised to say that, then the question would be, are we really taking up the LP gas as individuals inside this room? I would say that we said LP gas is one of the main challenges. First is the price, the availability of LP gas. But linked to the availability of the LP gas is the issue of the price. Because we need also to have regulatory certainty for people to be able to invest, especially when it comes to import facilities. Because we have to import gas when one considers our capacity. When we're talking about 300,000 to 400,000 per annum. Therefore, we then have to look at the issues of the price. And to address the issues of the price, we're looking at the value chain, so we can be able to address the price issue, which we then have to pilot it so we can come up with something that you say, guys, this is feasible. Let us then put our heads together and come up with a regulation around the issue of price, which in itself will also help to address the issue of the whole value chain now, the physical infrastructure part of it. And therefore, once if we sort those things out, we then be able to have guests that you know that first of all is going to be available, and then you know for certain what the price is going to be. And therefore, you can then say, I would buy a gas stove, I would buy this one. You say that certainty, that regulatory certainty. So the regulation is there to try to put that regulatory certainty for everybody concerned. That is how I see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. And also apologies for adding to the confusion this morning. Mr. Gouveia is absolutely right. Gas is gas. What is confusing, though, is that not all gas regulation equals gas regulation in South Africa. So we have LPG, which is the from a layperson's perspective, is the stuff in cylinders that comes in these, you know, that you use for a stove or for a dryer or whatever. That is regulated by the minister, by the department, obviously, as the LPG association explained, and is regulated ex facto. The natural gas that we regulate is gas that comes from two sources. One is Mozambique, the Mozambican gas pipeline, and one is synthetic gas that's produced by Secunda, which is then transmitted and distributed in the Mpumalanga KZN area. So I hope that that is clear. Where it gets really confusing for us is that the minute that LPG goes from that, goes instead of going into a cylinder, goes into a pipeline, it would fall under our jurisdiction again. But as was pointed out, LPG is unlikely to be transported over through a pipeline over long distances. Now, our position is very much that we fully agree with the conceptual issues that have been raised of saying, look, we need a market, we need to stimulate a market for gas usage as a as an appropriate energy source for particular uses. And to do that, we are having this pilot with LPG. So in that case, LPG is the egg that will then hopefully develop into a chicken. Our only concern is that, and as has been raised here this morning, is that we shouldn't necessarily focus that on poorer households. And we would be looking at for instance, trying to get an egg in the shape of an OCGT facility that could be gas to power facility that could use LPG or heavy fuel oil so that in future it can be supplied by natural gas. Similarly, industrial users. There are industrial users in South Africa. They are supplied with natural gas from Sasol. And there's a lot of potential in neighboring countries, the Mozambican gas fields, there are extensions to that, but even our own West Coast fields and Namibia for great natural gas finds. That gas can be either used for power generation, it can be used for industrial users either via pipeline or what is happening at the moment is compressed natural gas is being stored in mobile storage units at industrial users' facilities. And this is where I think the leadership of government is very important. Shepherdson, you mentioned transport. Our neighbors in Mozambique are using compressed natural gas in public transport. Now, what a wonderful way of kickstarting a CNG type market. We are already seeing that there are mobile compressed natural gas, which is in between. That compressed natural gas, just to add to the confusion, is in between the pressures of natural gas and LPG. I hope that's right. Or temperature. I shouldn't venture into the technical area. I'm an economist. Some of the other issues that have been raised that I would like to address is the issue of industrial users. Yes, clearly this should be a key market for natural gas in particular, because as Mr. Gumede pointed out, before you can use natural gas, you need a lot of infrastructure. So to start with households, natural gas now, not LPG. Is quite difficult. So you have to start with industrial users, and many users have been identified. The obstacles that are there are, however, that they are not necessarily convinced that there is sustainable supply out there, and there has been a sort of slump in exploration activity before the latest electricity crisis, because the electricity prices were considered so low, and this was erroneously seen as an impediment to gas power generation. Competing with low electricity prices by gas per se. And then the question about LPG prices around the world, I apologize, I don't have the comparisons with me. What I would like to say about that is that we need to ask ourselves if that is the route we want to go. The poor use LPG around the world, but since when do we want to compare ourselves to the least developed countries? Is that our aspiration? Do we want to aspire to something that that is common in countries where they are devoid of energy infrastructure? We are not devoid of infrastructure, and when we have households that have access to electricity and we try to displace that electricity with LPG, saying that this is for whatever noble reason, our concern is, in that case, you are disadvantaging the poor. They have access to this low-cost electricity, which for now is low-cost. and you want to displace it with high price LPG. Yes, it will create an awareness of the efficiency of gas, but shouldn't we start with the higher incomes? That was a small contribution on the LPG project. We're not criticizing the project, it was just a concern. And our concern comes from the fact that we see a lot of potential for natural gas, which is the pipelines again, where government can show some leadership to say, okay, we will actively support gas to power generation. We will include it in the National Integrated Resource Planning. What we can do is we can use it for transport, for public transport, or we will actively encourage ESCOM to sign power purchase agreements with our neighboring countries. We are aware, I think, of the Kudu gas field and the Ilubesi gas field and the ones, and Colbert methane even in the sun. Sorry, I'm going on a bit. There was one other question about the competition in LPG. I must apologize. The competition I was referring to was in natural gas. We don't obviously regulate LPG gas cylinders, and I understand from my colleague from the department that there are seven suppliers, so that's basically all the oil companies supply LPG, and the high prices are clearly an indication of lack of competition at the retail level. And I also would like to note the observation from the LPG Gas Association that an LNG terminal is required, and that would possibly one of the types of interventions that could really lead to a greater uptake of gas usage by industrial use.
Yeah, I think the time now is 1:05. I think I almost run out of time. Unfortunately, we can just ask her now and let us know in the study when the next committee, because time is run out. But thank you very much for the presentation. It's two important things that I think we have learned from this presentation. One is that the approach that the egg and chicken contract is very important, that you build very well, that if we can build on LPG market, then it can therefore lead automatically to infrastructure of industry buying into this, and therefore the natural pipeline, natural gas being the real alternative, because then it will have convinced all the industrialists that it is a workable solution, so there will be market for it, and there could be therefore contracts which NRC is suggesting that the government can then engage a big utilities like ESCOM to then engage. That's a very important thing. Secondly, out of that, I think therefore that these ideas that come from all of you, including some pilot projects, are supposed to have been coordinated a long time ago into something like an energy, an energy forum for better planning. Because then these ideas, then they work up into a solution that is good for the nation. I think these are some of the things that we can learn from. Thirdly, what it also adds, what we call energy and environmental betterment. So automatically, if these concepts are adopted at industrial scale level and at government level, then there are also spin-offs about environmental consequences. So these are the three important things that I think as a committee we have learned and we can encourage and on our part. This is what we'll be monitoring next time when we meet with you, how far have you gone with these issues, because they are emanating from your own planning, but it doesn't, your planning has been uncoordinated. With that, I think that we can say that it was a day. Thank you very much for the presentation. We have learned a lot about LPG gas and the natural gas and the challenges that are facing the two components. I hope that therefore you, NERSA, together with GME and other stakeholders will work towards achieving a common solution for the betterment of our people and easy accessibility of our people to energy
taking into regard the cross-subsidization concept, the geographic manipulation of these cross-subsidies and so forth. These are some of the things that I think we have to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.